We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Getting ready for the final shot of the third quarter. It's Kemba. Fires it! And makes it!
You're listening to BuzzBeat Radio, your premier Charlotte Hornets show, now broadcasting with your host, Richie and Spencer.
What's up, BuzzBeat listeners? This is Richie, one half of the BuzzBeat. Unfortunately, Spencer won't be able to make it tonight on episode 26 of BuzzBeat Radio. He is spending some time with his family over Memorial Day weekend. Hope all of you guys had a great weekend, Memorial Day weekend. Spent some time with some family. Maybe you spent some time at the pool or grilled out. But definitely wanted to get an episode out there to you guys because it seems like it's been a long time since our last one. Again, this is our 26th episode of BuzzBeat Radio. We want to get you guys involved as much as possible. And we set up a voicemail. And you can call this voicemail. I believe it goes directly to the voicemail. It'll ask you to leave your message. So just leave your name, your message, whether it's a comment or a question about the Hornets season. It can be as quick as, you know, a 15-second question, or you can actually give your take on the Hornets, and we'll try to put it in the show. So you'll actually get to hear your voice during the show if you call up this voicemail. Unfortunately, we didn't get any voicemails this time around. We did get a couple questions through Twitter, which I will address briefly today on the show. But if you want to call into the voicemail, the number is 980-999-0678. Again, the voicemail is 980-999-0678. So definitely give that a call if you want your voice heard here on BuzzBeat. This show, obviously without Spencer, is not going to be much of a dialogue. I'm just going to go over a couple of quick news with the Charlotte Hornets. You know, this is kind of a weird time right now where the playoffs are still going on. We still got two teams, which we expected all along. The Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors will be facing off on Thursday for game one of the finals. Again, this is what everyone expected. And I think the playoffs, I mean, it definitely needs a finals like this considering how the playoffs have gone. Every round, I feel like, has gotten worse and worse in terms of just the competitiveness. The first round of the NBA playoffs, I actually enjoyed. I didn't watch much of the second round, but I would say it wasn't as good as the first just based off of what I saw and based off the highlights and everything I read up on. And then the third round was even worse. I mean, it was just the conference finals were over before you knew it. So that's why we have this big gap, big delay before the NBA finals. Again, this is the third time in a row that the Cavaliers and the Warriors will be facing off, and I'm excited to watch it. I will watch every game, whether that's 5, 6, 7. I do think it's going to go 5 or 6. I think some people think that it's going to go the distance. I do see Warriors winning in 5 or 6. Cavaliers have some holes on the defensive end, but they're actually playing some good basketball in the playoffs, but obviously they've not faced anyone of the caliber of the Warriors. So yeah, it is kind of a weird time for Hornets fans because it's not quite the off season. So there's no real news to speak of, but I will go over a couple of things. The first news happened recently in which we were awarded, Charlotte, the city of Charlotte, was awarded the 2019 NBA All-Star Game. Again, we were slated to have the 2017 All-Star Game here in Charlotte, but because of House Bill 2, it was pulled from the city of Charlotte, and we saw a lot of sporting events in Charlotte get pulled because of this bill. Very controversial bill, and definitely had an impact on the city of Charlotte and the state of North Carolina as a whole. The NBA did say that they were going to reserve Charlotte in 2019 if they can get it revised or repealed. That's House Bill 2, that is. And it was. I don't think it was a total repeal. And many people will say that it really wasn't much of a revision, but we do have the All-Star Game in 2019. I think many probably would have enjoyed having it this year, especially considering the fact that Kemba made his first All-Star Game. It would have been a good year, good season for him to showcase his talents here in Charlotte. It would have been a nice little story there, but unfortunately, that was pulled and given to New Orleans. Sounds like a familiar story where a lot of things are taken from the city of Charlotte and given to the city of New Orleans. So here's just a quote from Michael Jordan, according to Hornets.com, about his take and his reaction to the fact that Charlotte has been awarded the 2019 All-Star Game. Quote, "We are thrilled the league has awarded NBA All-Star 2019 to the city of Charlotte. We want to thank Commissioner Silver for his leadership throughout this process and for the decision to bring NBA All-Star back to Buzz City. All-Star Weekend is an international event that will provide a tremendous economic impact to our community while showcasing our city, our franchise, and our passionate Hornets fan base to people around the world. We look forward to serving as host for the NBA All-Star 2019 and welcome all visitors and guests to the Spectrum Center." End quote. So, I mean, the biggest thing to take away from this, he talks about the All-Star Weekend being very international, an international event. People from all over, all eyes are on Charlotte, all eyes are on whatever city there is that's hosting that All-Star Game. And it definitely has a tremendous economic impact. And we saw the impact that the HB2 had on North Carolina in general. It was projected that they lost $630 million because of this bill. And $106 million of that was because of the All-Star Game. Again, these are just projections of the millions and millions of dollars that the state of North Carolina lost. So, you know, it's no longer about politics. I mean, it's still about politics, but it's also all about the money. And if the city of North Carolina wants to bring in that money, they might have to do some revisions on the political end so that big sporting events like the NCAA tournament and NBA All-Star Game can come here to the city of Charlotte in the state of North Carolina. And I was a little surprised at the fact that we did get this All-Star Game back in 2019, because I know from everything that I've read, House Bill 2 wasn't necessarily completely repealed, but it was revised a little bit. It kind of resets things back to the way that they were prior to the Charlotte City Council proposing that ordinance. You know, we all call it the bathroom law. But also, this new HB 142 restricts cities from creating non-discriminatory ordinance until December 2020. So it's definite date now in terms of when they can create non-discriminatory ordinances like Charlotte did recently. But it still won't be solved by, unless something changes, it still won't be solved by the 2019 All-Star Game. So from everything I'm understanding, it's a revision. It definitely puts a definite date on when the non-discriminatory ordinances can be put back into place. So if the city of Charlotte wanted to do that, they would have to wait till 2020. So I guess the NBA saw that it was a step in the right direction, and now they have awarded Charlotte the 2019 All-Star Game. So next year it actually will be in LA. The year following, the season following, will be in Charlotte. So obviously this means a lot for the city. It means a lot for the Charlotte Hornets. But when it all comes down to it, it came down to money. And the city of Charlotte, and especially the state of North Carolina, has to have realized that after all the millions of dollars that they lost because of this bill, sometimes the politics need to be put to the side. Or, you know, just do the right thing. Just do the right thing is really what it comes down to. All right, another set of news that has come out recently is Kemba's third knee procedure. And this is kind of I wish Spencer was here to discuss this with me, because I would want to know what his take is on Kemba's knee surgery. This is his third knee surgery in about 3 years. Last year, in May of 2016, he had a procedure to fix a torn meniscus. The year prior, it was in January of 2015, where his knee had some inflammation. And then this year, just recently, in the past 2 weeks or so, he had what we call a minor procedure on his knee. I don't know exactly what minor means, but definitely fixing some of the same knee issues, the same knee that he's been having issues with for the past several years. It will take 6 weeks for Kemba to recover completely, and he'll be cleared to participate in basketball activities probably around late June, early July. So I would really want Spencer here to hear his take, maybe on the next show, that we'll kind of talk to him about this. I don't think necessarily the fact that he's not being able to participate until late June, early July is really the issue here. It's more of a concern moving forward. You know, will this continue to happen where he's going to have these minor knee procedures to kind of clean up that left knee? You know, I don't think we necessarily saw any lack of explosion for Kemba this year. Like, it wasn't noticeable by any means. But, you know, what I saw from this team is that we over-relied on Kemba. You know, we don't have a backup point guard that can come in, and we're not having to worry if we're going to blow a lead or if this lead that is right there at the cusp is just going to balloon in the opposition's favor. So the backup point guard position definitely needs to be addressed, because if not, we saw towards the end of the year, it just felt like Kemba was playing more than he had to, especially in the second half. You know, he needed to take a rest. He needed to make sure that his body doesn't take this toll year after year, because if so, I don't see these knees getting any better. I can see the wear and tear definitely increasing throughout the years. And this is something that I would consider somewhat of a concern. I don't think that we can just kind of brush this off and say, oh, it's just a minor procedure that he had in May. He'll be back by July and we're all good to go. Okay. I mean, that may be the case come July and August and in October when the season starts. But as the season progresses, if we don't address this backup point guard position and he's having to carry the load again like he did this year, the concern for the knee goes up. Okay. And who knows how many procedures he's going to have on this knee. We don't want it to be every single year where he's having to get this cleaned up. So I don't know how concerned Charlotte fans are. I would definitely want to know what Spencer's take on this is, because I'm a little bit concerned about this, but more concerned about the fact that we need to address that backup point guard position, because Sessions wasn't getting it done. And we'll talk about him a little bit later. And then we had Brian Roberts fill in. He wasn't the answer. And then Briante Weber is just too young to completely understand how to run an offense from the point guard position. And he came in to our system halfway through the year. So it wasn't necessarily something that he was in there through training camp and kind of working his way from the beginning of the year. So he's not going to be the answer in the short term, Briante Weber, that is. Maybe in the long term, I can see him as a third point guard, but this offseason, if we don't address this backup point guard position, these knee problems from Kemba are going to continue in my eyes. All right, the next set of information that we came across today, I mean, not many people heard about this, but I saw a Twitter post from MKG, or maybe it wasn't MKG, maybe it was actually his new shooting coach, Chris Matthews, on Twitter, a.k.a. Lethal Shooter. He was a basketball player not too long ago that tried to make it to the NBA. He didn't. He played college ball under Tony Bennett at Washington State. He then transferred to St. Bonaventure to be closer to home. He never made it to the NBA, like I said, but he did play for the D-League for a little bit and also played overseas. He is a shooting coach that has worked with Dwight Howard before, and we all know that Dwight Howard has had his up and down career when it comes to shooting the ball, especially from the free throw line. He's worked with them this year, and I know that he has other clients, but that was kind of one of the notable ones that I've seen that he's worked with. He actually shot 63% from the free throw line, Dwight Howard, that is, in the playoffs, and I know that doesn't seem great, but for Howard it is. And I saw what the effects that he had on Howard in terms of just the way his mechanics were. You know, it was less movement, it was more fluid. And I remember Dwight Howard always used to just flick the ball up there when he was shooting from the free throw line. and it kind of looks a little bit more fluid recently. And we saw that in the playoffs. And I saw some videos of him working with Chris Matthews on his Twitter and Instagram page. And this, the photo that they showed of MKG was him from the free throw line, and it looked like he had good balance. Again, this was just a still shot, and his elbow was in. It wasn't flared out like it normally is. So, again, this is one of those things where MKG has had these inconsistencies with his mechanics since coming into the league, and I think that's the biggest thing when it comes to shooting. It's just muscle memory, and if you can get down some of the good mechanics and you can consistently do that, you become a better shooter instantly. MKG has had poor mechanics, but he's also had inconsistencies in the way that he shot the ball. You know, we've had shooters before that don't always have the best mechanics. You know, we have Kevin Martin, who kind of shoots from the hip. Reggie Miller, after he shot in his follow through, his hands touched. Okay. One of the best 3-point shooters there ever has been in the NBA. Reggie Miller didn't have the most sound mechanics. That is an issue with MKG, is his mechanics. That elbow flares out, both of them. But really, the shooting elbow is kind of what we want to focus on. And it just hasn't been consistent throughout his career. So I don't know how much hope I'm going to put into the fact that he has a new shooting coach. He's going to have to be consistent with what he does. And who knows, it may be too late in his career to actually establish something like this, because it's one of those things, if you were taught something for so long, or if you practice something for so long, it's almost just ingrained in the way that you shoot the ball. And MKG's biggest thing, the biggest knock on him, is the fact that he can't stretch the floor, cannot stretch the floor. He's going to offer you everything that he can on the defensive side. He's going to try his hardest to shut down the opposing wing. He does a very good job of getting that defensive rebound and going out in transition. He's gotten better in transition. He still kind of shies away from contact at the rim. But the one thing that's always been the knock on him is his shooting. And I don't think we can ever expect him to extend his range out to the 3-point line. But one thing that I think that we should expect of him is to get a freaking mid-range shot. Because if he doesn't have any range and he doesn't stretch the floor and doesn't have any consistency in the mid-range, the defense will just clog up even more. And I know that he likes to try to get the ball at the rim and try to beat it that way, but if he can't stretch the floor even to the slightest from the mid-range, it's going to be one of those things where his name gets brought up more and more in conversations, more than it already has in trade conversations. I know a lot of people have already been saying that, you know, Kid Gilchrist's trade value is at its highest point as it ever has been. He's still young, 24 years old. He's got room to grow, but it's one of those things. If he doesn't consistently shoot the ball with consistent mechanics, it's not ever going to develop for him. So I know a lot of Hornets fans have seen this photo and probably are kind of shaking their heads. Well, it's great that he's trying, and that's, you know, always something that you never have to question with MKG, is his ability to try, his ability to work hard and try to get better every year. He's a competitor. And we know that from him. But, you know, I know a lot of people are clamoring for the fact that he needs to be traded. And maybe his value is at an all-time high right now. But I just hope that one day he can get that mid-range shot. I'm not expecting a 3-point shot. But if he can get that mid-range shot down, it would be great for his game. And it would make things easier on him on the offensive end. And especially for the Hornets as well. So it'd be interesting to see how Chris Matthews, lethal shooter, gets him in this new shooting form. And let's see if it sticks with him. Let's see if it sticks.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rafuse.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Cousart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
All right, we're going to get to the portion of the show where you guys get involved. We've stated this multiple times. You don't need to wait for a tweet from BuzzBeat Radio for you guys to send in your questions. We'll take them anytime. We'll try to make a note of them so that we can get them on the show. Or, even better, if you call our voicemail, like I stated at the beginning of the show, you'll get to hear your voice. Again, that number is 980-999-0678. If you want your voice to be heard, send in any questions or comments through that voicemail. We do have three questions for the show that I want to talk about briefly. The first one is from @PatrickConnor7. Can we rank the top 10 prospects in this year's draft? I think this is a good thing to do because guess what? We're drafting number 11. So if these 10 players go to the first 10 teams, and again, it's always, you know, not every team drafts best player available or they have the same big board as everyone else. You know, after these players are off the board, there's going to be two or three or four that we have from choosing. So my top 10 prospects, and again, Spencer is the college nut here, not me. I don't know what I would do without Draft Express. That has helped me a lot when it comes to researching for these prospects. So my top 10 probably looks very similar to a mock draft that you're going to see on Draft Express. I don't have much knowledge in terms of trying to switch things around. So my top 10 prospects, and I would love to hear what Spencer's are. Number one is Fultz. Number two is Jackson. I actually like him a little bit better than Ball. And I think it might just be for the fact that I do like wings a little bit better, threes and fours a little bit better than twos. And I just like the way that he projects on both ends of the court. I got Lonzo Ball at number three, Tatum at number four, De'Aaron Fox at number five, Jonathan Isaac at number six. I feel like not a lot of people are talking about Isaac. I wonder if he slips a little bit. He just is one of those players that is probably going to be picked more based off of his upside. And I know that word is overused. More than maybe his production that he had at Florida State. But yeah, I have him at number six. Number seven, Malik Monk. And again, we talked about it here on the show that maybe he will slide because of his height. I think he's solidly in the top 10. Number eight, Smith Jr. from NC State. Brian Geisinger and Spencer recently put out a post on Queen City Hoops pitting Smith Jr. against Neil Aquina. And definitely check out those prospects, head-to-head prospects post that we have over at Queen City Hoops. I'm going to be putting one out for my guy, Donovan Mitchell, and he's going to be pitted against another prospect. I won't tell you who, but that should be coming out in the next 2 weeks or so. I think we still got like two more scheduled, and there's the two that we've done so far have been very, very informative. The one that Brian and Spencer recently did, it's very, very lengthy. Has some definitely number overload on Brian's side. He loves those stats, but definitely gives a good case for both Smith Jr. and Neil Aquina. But I have Smith Jr. at 8 on my top 10 prospects. Number 9, I got Collins. And then number 10, I got Markkanen. And we've talked about Markkanen here on this show that, you know, other than his lethal shooting from outside, is there much that he offers? Anything else, you know, whether it's even on the offensive end, like what else does he offer on the offensive end? I know that he is the best big shooter in this draft, but defensively he's a hole. And then on the offensive end, is he just going to be a stretch four, stretch five that has no inside game whatsoever? So a lot of people see something in him because he is projected to go in the lottery and in the top 10 for most people mock draft, but I got him at number 10. So those are my top 10 for you, Patrick Connor 7. Take that with a grain of salt, again, because I am not a college nut like Spencer is. Next question actually comes from Patrick Connor 7. Who will win the Rookie of the Year? When I first read this question, I didn't know if he was meaning the upcoming draft class or the season that is almost ended here with one more round to go with the finals. And the more that I think about it, I think he was talking about this season. I think when I initially read it, I thought he was talking about the upcoming draft and who I thought would win the Rookie of the Year. But I do think he means this year. But anyway, I'll give you both answers. And I think both answers are going to be based on the same logic. I think a lot of times, rookies that are placed in good situations, teams that are competing for the playoffs, teams that have good pieces around them that they can come in and fit in right away, typically do well. You know, obviously, unless you're a star that's taking over a pretty bad team, it does take some help. I mean, it does take some help. So I will say Fultz. And again, this assumes that he is drafted number one overall to the Celtics, and the Celtics don't trade the pick. So that's kind of why I'm assuming that this question was for this current season that we're in. So to answer the question of the current season, I'm going to go with Malcolm Brogdon. He hasn't been flashy. And obviously the other two candidates are Joel Embiid and Dario Saric. Embiid, if he played 60, 65 games, this would be a shoe-in for him. Okay, no doubt. That's what makes this conversation interesting, is the fact that he's only played like 30 games this year. You know, when he first started the season, he wouldn't play on back-to-backs, and then he got injured, and then he was shut down for the rest of the year. And that's another thing with Embiid. He is technically a rookie by definition, but, you know, his first 2 years in the league, he sat out as well. And I get that he can still win the Rookie of the Year, but I wonder how valid it is. I know that Blake Griffin did the same thing. He sat out a year, didn't play. And I know that you're not really getting better if you're rehabbing all the time, but just something about not being a rookie in terms of being drafted that year and you winning the Rookie of the Year, I always felt weird about that. But Blake Griffin did do that, and Embiid, if he were to win, technically he wasn't drafted this year in the 2016 draft. So I don't think he's going to win, though, because I don't think he's played enough games. I don't think voters are going to go that way. I think that Malcolm Brogdon, while he hasn't been flashy, he's gotten it done throughout the course of the year. He's been the most consistent. Saric, on the other hand, was definitely up and down in the beginning of the year. Post-All-Star break, if Saric put up the numbers that he did post-All-Star break throughout the course of the year, his name would probably be the front runner. But Brogdon, like I said, he's in a good situation. He plays for a playoff team or a team that was in the playoffs. And he started to see the court a little bit more as a starter late in the season. And another interesting fact about Brogdon, he was a second-round pick, 36th overall, I believe. So he would be the first second-round pick to be awarded the Rookie of the Year. So definitely an interesting story there. You know, he's not flashy, like I said. Very efficient player. He distributes the ball very well. Shoots the ball from three at an efficient clip. And he plays defense, and he's been doing it all season long. He really hasn't necessarily had these big ups and downs. Pretty consistent through the 82 seasons. I know he didn't play all 82 games, but definitely more consistent than Joel Embiid, and his team played in the playoffs. So I think the case for Brogdon is probably the easiest to make, and I do think that he's going to win. I don't know if Spencer would say the same thing, but I think he would. I think he would. And it'd be interesting to see Embiid win it just because he has been the best rookie, quote-unquote, that has played this year, but he just has not played enough games. All right, the last question comes from Radford333 on Twitter. Who can the Hornets get to replace Sessions? They are going to replace him, right? So that was his question sent in, and like I said, I told you we were going to get to Sessions in this show because I knew this question was coming up. And I will say, we talked about this several shows ago. We definitely need to replace Sessions. Now, one of two things can happen. We can draft a point guard or a combo guard, or in free agency, we can use our mid-level exception to acquire a point guard. Now, the mid-level exception this year is higher than it was last year. It's about $8 million or so. And that can get you a decent player. It can get you a decent player. It can get you a player that is going to offer you something a little bit more than Sessions did this year. Now, but if you look at the free agent class, the point guard position is pretty slim pickings there. Pretty slim pickings. And you have players like Sean Livingston, who we've mentioned before, Darren Collison. Out of all the point guards listed in the free agent class and the ones that are in our range realistically, Collison is going to be the one that would make sense for that MLE out of any of the players there. But the issue is he worth the MLE? Is he worth MLE? Or would it be better, and Spencer and I kind of talked about this, would it be better to go for a PJ Tucker or somebody else that is better than Collison, can offer you something at a different position, and then take the draft and use that to fill in for our backup point guard? Now, you all know who I like in this draft and who I've been gushing about is with Donovan Mitchell. And yes, he did play shooting guard at Louisville, but he definitely has the skills that translate over to the point guard position, or at least a combo guard at the least. You know, he's 6'3", which is more the size of a point guard. And I think that many people are hesitant about this guy because he is 6'3". But I'm telling you guys, his height is made up for the fact that he has a 6'10 wingspan and that he also has, you know, unbelievable athleticism. He can jump out of the gym. So his height is made up for both of those things. So he can actually guard. I would say he can guard some threes. He can definitely guard ones and twos. You know, he's shown at Louisville that he's a good defender. He has active hands. He gets in the passing lanes. He takes the ball the other way. And his 6'10 wingspan is going to allow him to guard players that have 3 or 4 inches on him in height because he makes up for it in the fact that he has wingspan. And then on the offensive end, he's athletic enough to where he can jump, out-jump you, and use that wingspan to finish at the rim over you. And I don't know if you guys saw, but I put together a couple of clips from Donovan Mitchell. I would say like maybe 6 or 7 clips, just kind of detailing his game. I like this guy a lot. I even like him at 11. I know some people are kind of hesitant about drafting a 6'3 combo guard at 11. I think he definitely will be there, obviously, but I also think that the value is there in drafting him because we do need a backup point guard. At the very least, he will come in on the bench and be someone that can provide a punch. And eventually, I think that he can develop point guard skills because he has shown the ability to work the pick and roll. And the numbers bear that out at Louisville. Louisville were a very good team when he was the ball handler. Whether he was shooting or whether he was getting others involved, they were very efficient with him out of the pick and roll. He's going to be a player that's going to be difficult to defend. You know, if he can just get his mindset right, getting the shot selection down, and being a smart basketball player, and when he shoots and when he drives and when he kicks the ball, everything else is going to fall into place. Because unlike MKG, who we talked about earlier, his form, his shooting form is pretty much flawless. Like, he has balance. Whether that's off the dribble, whether that's stand still, he has balance and he catches it in stride and goes up. It's consistent. You know, there's not any funky movement. He has very good form. That's not something that we're ever going to have to worry about with Donovan Mitchell. And I'll talk more about that in my piece at Queen City Hoops. But you can definitely check out that thread of videos that I put together with Mitchell. So to answer the question, who can the Hornets get to replace Sessions? You could take two routes. If you're going to keep them, then you pick up his option at $6 million, which is fine, but I don't think that's the ideal route to go. It might be realistic because I don't think people are going to see anybody in the point guard free agent pool that's worth the $8 million. Like, would you pay $2 million extra to get a point guard to replace Sessions, but then you have nothing left in the free agency because we're capped out? Or do you spend that money on somebody that is of better value than Darren Collinson and then draft someone like a Donovan Mitchell in the draft to take over as the backup point guard? And again, he might not be the point guard right away, but he's definitely going to be someone that you can trust in that second unit, I think. So yes, I do think that we will replace Sessions. It's going to have to come through free agency with Collison, with the MLE. I mean, we do have the biannual, but that's not going to get anyone of value, or it's going to come through the draft. But I do think many people think that we will pick up the option with Sessions, and I've kind of gone back and forth on it because it might make sense to pick up the option and then use that MLE elsewhere and just hope the other person kind of fills in and makes up for the deficiencies on Sessions' end. And the last thing that I want to get to is my big board of prospects for the Hornets. Again, this is not the 10 prospects that I listed earlier from the question from Patrick Connor. This is just 5 prospects, keeping it realistic in the Hornets range. 5 players that are in our range Let's make it 4 players that are in our range that I would like to see drafted by the Hornets. So obviously I'm going to start with number 4. And basically if 1, 2, and 3 are not here, which I highly doubt, this is the guy that I want. And then it kind of works its way up from there. So for number 4, I have OG Anunoby. He's my 4th player on my big board. So if 1, 2, and 3 are not here, I'm okay with drafting this guy. You know, but the issue is he reminds me a little bit too much of MKG. I think his athleticism is definitely greater than MKG's at this point. But the fact that he plays great defense, he has inconsistent shooting mechanics. I don't want OG just to be another MKG. But yeah, I mean, his athletic ability, his potential is there. The issue is his shooting numbers actually declined from freshman year to sophomore year. Definitely not in the right direction. And another thing that kind of scares me off with OG is his knee problems. You know, he's coming off an injury, and I don't believe he's going to be able to work out for any teams heading into the draft. So, you know, he's not going to be able to showcase his abilities. And to me, these one-on-one workouts or these three-on-three workouts, these draft workouts are much more telling than the combine. And we talked about the combine on the last show, how, you know, Brian, Spencer, and I just feel like these big players are not coming out because there's nothing to gain by it. But so he probably will miss out on these. To my knowledge, he's going to miss out on these draft workouts as well. I'm a little hesitant because of those knee issues. Number four, I have Frank Ntilikina. Spencer made a great case for him at QCH on the recent blog post. I think he's definitely someone that can come in and play that backup point guard role. He is somebody probably a little bit more easier to switch across one through three than Donovan Mitchell. He's lanky. He's not athletic like Mitchell, but he's definitely a smooth player. And I know I got onto him last time because he's a passive player from France, and we already have a player on our team that's like that. But, you know, he's young. He has potential. And he has all the physical tools there. He just needs to continue to get better. Shooting the ball needs to continue to get better on the defensive end. But he's someone that can come in right away and step in a Clifford system and defend one through three. Number two on the big board, I got Zach Collins. And I know that a lot of people are going to make the jokes about another white big for the Hornets. And I do like him. I do think that automatically he would be a player that probably competed for the best post moves. If not, well, he probably does have the best post moves out of anyone on our team currently. And he has shown the ability to stretch it out, at least to mid-range. And I know that he's made some threes throughout his course of his freshman year at Gonzaga. I don't think he's attempted too many, but it's definitely there. It's definitely there. Something more than Zeller can say. And Zeller has never developed that mid-range shot. And that's something that I think in the upcoming years, if he doesn't, you know, his value to this team might drop and decrease a little bit because opposing teams might defend the pick and roll a little bit differently when he's out there, because right now he's getting anything that he wants. And he's a hard worker. He definitely is a hard worker. And I've said this many times that Zeller is my second favorite player on this team. But I just do wonder if he never develops that mid-range shot, which he hasn't, and he hasn't really shown no glimpses this year, if teams are going to figure out a way to defend him and his pick-and-roll effectiveness might decrease a little bit. So if we do draft Collins, it does put the question out there, what do we do with all the other bigs? Yes, they happen to be white. What do we do with Frank Kaminsky? What do we do with Zeller? It might be a logjam. Might be time to trade one of those players if we do go Collins. But I don't think we shouldn't draft Collins because we are at a logjam at that position. And then number one, I know that I just gushed about this guy, is Donovan Mitchell. If he's there at 11 for me, which I think he will be, I think you take him. And I know that we've talked about this in the past, and I've suggested this about trading back with Portland. I still think that's an option. But I got actually closer and closer to the draft. I've kind of settled in on a prospect, and you know, you've always heard that if you like a prospect, not that I'm making any decisions, you just go for it. Okay, even if he's going to be there, the possibility that he's going to be there three or four picks below your spot, you go for it. Okay, you take him if you're that sold on the prospect. So that's my 1-4: Mitchell at 1, Collins at 2, Ntilikina at 3. 4 is going to be OG. And Anunoby. So if those four players are there, which they will be, there's the ones that I think that we're going to be selecting from, unless some kind of drastic thing occurs and we trade or somebody makes this big push come draft workout season, which should be coming up very soon. And I know that Spencer and I are not necessarily ready for the NBA playoffs to be over. We are definitely going to enjoy the NBA finals. I know that I'm going to be in tune to it way more than I was the second round of the playoffs. Because the playoffs have just, the competitiveness have decreased round by round. Okay, it's not been fun. I mean, as a fan of someone not named the Cavs and the Warriors, you know, the two great teams that were destined to play against each other. This is going to be the third time in a row that they play. But I'm definitely ready for the off season to begin so that we can start talking about free agency and the draft and things are a little bit more concrete. And then obviously I'm more excited for the season to start back up again. But there's many steps along the way before we get there. All right, guys, thank you for listening in to the 26th episode of BuzzBeat Radio. The next time we have a go around, Spencer will be here, and we're going to be back at it again for another show. Again, thanks for tuning in, and if you haven't, please give us a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. That would be greatly appreciated. And until next time, guys, check out all of our posts at Queen City Hoops, and make sure that you have downloaded this podcast. I'm sure if you're listening to it, you're subscribed to it. But if not, subscribe to this podcast so that you can get it right when it comes out. All right, guys, go Hornets.